Welcome to the CGMA Magazine podcast series, a service of the American Institute of CPAs and the Chartered Institute of Management Accountants. This series features discussions with chartered global management accountants and other experts about the topics, trends, and technologies that are transforming the accounting profession. Welcome to the CGMA Magazine podcast series. I'm Jack Hagel, an editorial director at CGMA Magazine. In this episode, we'll discuss rolling forecasts with Steve Player. Steve is the program director for the Beyond Budgeting Roundtable in North America, and he's a frequent speaker on how companies can improve the forecasting process. Steve is a CPA who holds the CGMA designation, and he recently shared tips on scenario planning in the latest print edition of CGMA Magazine, which can be found at cgmamagazine.org. We caught up with Steve in Orlando, Florida, at the AICPA's Financial Planning and Analysis Conference, where he offered pointers on how companies and finance professionals can spend less time on looking to the past and more time on planning for the future through forecasting. Steve, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, Jack. Happy to be here.
So let's start with the basics. What is a rolling forecast?
Well, a rolling forecast is essentially an ongoing tool for management that allows you to take your plan and continually update it. It rolls forward, so as time actually progresses, the forecast period that you originally laid out there becomes consumed by actual, so that it becomes very fixed. And so you keep the forecast horizon constant by rolling forward the approximate distance. So if I come and record a quarter's worth of actual, 3 months, I roll an additional quarter on the back end of the forecast. So essentially, I'm updating the full horizon plus adding additional time on the outside to keep my forecast horizon or the window I'm looking at constant. So it's like driving a car. I want to keep a constant distance ahead of me so I've got enough lead time to see the problems coming at me. So as I incur more actual, I roll forward. I contrast that with a common problem that a lot of people who do forecasting do but don't do rolling forecasts. They do what we call forecasting to the wall. And while they may periodically on a monthly or quarterly basis update their forecast, they only go to year end. They only go to the wall. So essentially, at the beginning of a period, you may forecast 12 months, 9 months, 6 months, 3 months, and with about a month or two to go, then you forecast another full year out. And the analogy I often use in discussions and seminars is it's like buying a brand new car. And the first night you got in the new car, you turn the lights on and a funny thing happened. It shone out 1,500 feet, but as you put the car in the drive and begin to go forward, now all of a sudden the lights are doing a funny thing. They're only showing 1,200 feet, 1,000 feet, 800 feet, and with about 200 feet to go, almost to the point of total darkness, they pop out another 1,500 feet. I think all of us would realize that's not a safe car to drive. But yet we'll run a forecasting system that has that same degree of visibility where we go almost to the point of total darkness and then we pop out another 1,500 feet or another year, if you will. And the problem with that is not only is it the diminishing return, you go almost to the point of darkness, but there's a second problem that's equally bad. And that second problem is the view you're getting is not true. It's distorted. Because the minute your forecasts start asking the question, where am I going to be at the end of the year? Everybody understands it's not about visibility. It's all about, am I going to get to the year-end target? So they begin to know you don't really want to know where you're going. What you really want to know instead is, am I going to confirm and hit the year-end target we negotiated? So they begin to distort their answer to come back to, am I going to hit that year-end target?
So if a company were to do this right, that would probably make the budget process obsolete, correct?
Well, there's a lot of reasons the budget process today is obsolete. Most companies, even though they continue to mechanically do it and continue to have a lot of management accounting wasting tremendous times explaining it, it's in many cases obsolete today shortly after it's prepared. Many budget targets don't last until even the year begins, much less any distance into the year. So most cases what finance is doing is what I call dumb stuff. It wastes a tremendous amount of time explaining variances, which are really where are we today versus where we thought we were going to be in the middle of last summer when we put the budget assumptions together. And the reality is when you're comparing to the middle of last summer, the moment you've moved beyond that, the moment you realize the assumptions you made are wrong, everybody in operations is looking forward. But what's accounting doing? Accounting's stuck on trying to explain where we were versus where we thought we were going to be in the middle of last summer. And it's just dumb stuff. It's why most people in operations find finance irrelevant and asking stupid questions that don't help manage the business. If we're going to transform finance, we've got to stop asking dumb questions and get on to helping the business move forward.
So why are companies still still doing budgets?
Why do we still do? We're stuck in tradition. We're stuck in a rut. We're doing it the same way we've always done it because we just can't break away from essentially bad practice. And because we have the illusion of control, we have the illusion that we've got things under control. And the reality is, even when we hit our budget, if the assumptions turn out to be wrong, we either overperform or underperform based on apparency of the budget, and the reality is the market's gone someplace else. In today's world of real-time information, in today's world of constant change, we've got to have a planning system that does a better job of holding people accountable, of being current, of being really forward-looking as opposed to backward-looking. A lot of times in seminars, I use the analogy of ships. And in finance, if you have to say where we're positioned, in most cases, finance is positioned at the stern of the ship. We're looking off the back of the boat, staring at the wake, yelling over our shoulder to the captain, we seem to be going about this fast that we may be turning. And frankly, the captain doesn't care because he's not worried about the back of the boat. He's worried about the front of the boat and where everything's going. So finance to transform has got to get off the back of the boat and got to get up there on the bridge beside the captain and start looking forward. And shifting to tools like rolling forecasts that are constantly forward-looking are tools that move us that way, of separating all these purposes that budgets try to do, none of which it does very well, and replacing those with a series of forward-looking tools that help us manage the business as we go forward in a much more effective way.
So are you seeing more companies do this?
Yeah, we've seen a huge uptick, and particularly in the last 4 years. Companies, very large companies, publicly held companies like Statoil, American Express, Unilever, but a lot of small companies too. $10 million advertising company in Chicago, a 70-person credit union in Omaha, Nebraska. All different size companies making these moves because they realized what they were doing didn't make sense. It wasn't based in where we're going. It was based in where we thought we were going in the past. And the reality is nobody cared about that anymore. We have to turn around and start moving forward.
Was there one point in the economy in the past 5-10 years that really led a lot more companies to go to a rolling forecast?
The real watershed event was the end of 2008. And if you remember 2008, when Lehman Brothers went bankrupt and the economy went in free fall, everybody doing annual budgets had kind of got their first pass. They were sending it to the board. Lehman went bankrupt. The markets began to fall. And they said, go back. Those assumptions seemed to be, you know, out of whack. They seemed to be too aggressive. So they redid their budget. They brought it back. And by the time they brought it back, the market had fell more, and they had to go do it again. Third time they brought it back, so they quit redoing it. Every time you redo it, the market falls further. And so most people went through the end of 2008 not knowing where they were going, not really sure. So either they didn't finish the budget, or if they finished it, they probably ignored it, simply because the market was changing so much and had so much uncertainty, you didn't know what was going to happen.
What prevents companies from going to a rolling forecast?
What prevents them from doing the rolling forecast is really rolling forecast is something you can do whether you budget or not. Putting in a rolling forecast is about just thinking about things differently. It's about having a consistent horizon. It's about breaking through that year-end boundary, not going forecasting the wall, but thinking, what is the horizon? The forecast horizon is the amount of distance you need to be looking forward. How far do I need to look out to see the things coming at me that allow me to take advantage, to correct problems, and so forth? So the rolling horizon is based off of that. Any company can do that, even if they traditionally budget. An evolutionary strategy for implementation that we're seeing many companies do follow that kind of approach. Let me put in a rolling forecast. Once I have that up and going, then I'll come around in each year. And when the annual budget cycle comes, I'll ask the question, do I really need to do that? Because if you've got a really good rolling forecast, there's really not a need to budget because you've already got the information and you're updating it frequently. You're constantly moving forward. So it's kind of a way to put in a rolling forecast and let the old budget just drop away.
So what would you recommend to finance professionals who are trying to transition to that type of model? And so what does that sales pitch sound like to the CEO?
Well, for one thing, it's going to give you better control because it's going to be more frequent, more current, and more constantly updated. Second thing, it's more than just a rolling forecast.
So this is what they're telling the CEO?
Yeah, a lot of people think if I just put in a rolling forecast, I'm done. And the reality is rolling forecast is one of the 12 Beyond Budgeting Principles. It's not the only one. When I change rolling forecasting, I also, if I'm going to move completely beyond budgets, I have to think about target setting. How do I change my targets? Instead of fixating on this year-end target, which is why everybody goes to the wall, I've got to stretch my target setting process out. I want to think about targets instead of one-year targets. Think about the strategic plan and having 3 to 5 year out targets. The target setting is really to point the direction the organization to go. It's really about being aspirational. So you want it out there close enough that people to see it, But if you only make it 1 year, it becomes a negotiated stopping point. Most people don't realize when we're talking about targeting, what they're really negotiating is the stopping point. And because everybody pays compensation for reaching the target, what they're really trying to do is negotiate one low enough they can always get their bonus. If instead you'll make the target 3 to 5 years based on the strategic plan, it still has that direction setting ability. It still shows you where you're trying to go. And it tells everybody, get there as fast as you can. If the economy's really good, if everything's favorable, sail really fast. The wind's blowing strong. If the economy, the wind doesn't blow at all, if we had some really tough times, break out the oars and start rowing. We're still trying to get to where the strategic direction says we want to be. It's just take advantage of the economy, good or bad, and get there as fast as you can. So it's a different way of thinking about target setting. Likewise, incentive comp. We decouple incentive comp. Instead of paying it for hitting the one-year target, we want to pay people based on the value they create. So not based on negotiating a budget or even negotiating the target for the first year, but relative to the environment you operate in, how much progress did you really make? So think about incentive comp differently in terms of measure it based on value actually created. So there is, again, no stopping point. You go as fast as you can. Make the resource allocation, not a negotiated once a year event, but a continuous process. Make the action planning and updating continuously. A lot of people only want to do their action planning once a year. Well, the reality of this world is things change all the time. Your action plans need to update based on competitors, based on opportunities. You need the flexibility to respond instantly. So let's think about how we pull these, what budgets usually do, apart into its different approaches and think about it differently. Statoil has a really great approach that talks about, you know, the different purposes, why budgets are poor at doing everything. So target setting, you want to be aspirational. Forecasting, you don't want to be aspirational, but you want to be realistic. Where do I really think I'm going to go? Resource allocation, you want to be very responsive. Performance measure, you want to judge relative to the competition. So you've got four different purposes for essentially the similar numbers. How do you make them where they set up to work well in each one? And that's what Beyond Budgeting and its methodology has been able to figure out.
I want to go back to that a bit about compensation. Mm-hmm. Do you know of any companies that are doing a really good job with the compensation part of it?
There's several companies doing a good job with
compensation. And what do they do that makes it a model?
In terms of compensation, one of the key things you want to do is decouple it from this target negotiation. Because anytime you've got negotiation, you've got people trying to negotiate lowest return. What you want to do is based on value creation. So measure how much value you created and pay the incentives based on a percent of the value that you created. Tie the incentives so that they align well between what the employee or the leadership does and what the shareholder sees. American Express has done a really good job of tying Ken Chenault's executive salary to what really rewards the shareholders. And it really aligns that. In many cases, the executive salaries are really tied to rewarding executives, not so much rewarding shareholders. So a good test of whether or not you've decoupled this is if you've linked up that executive comp so it really rewards the shareholders in terms of what's out there. You also want to make sure that the rewards are based on the long-term value creation, not the temperamental value creation. In many cases, executives are rewarded for hitting the year-end number. Well, to hit the year-end number, there's a lot of artificial things you can do that make this year look good, even though you're sacrificing the future. You can cut training, you can cut travel, you can cut customer relations. You can trim a lot of short-term costs, which will shore up this quarter's earnings, but at the detriment of the long-term health of the organization. So you want to make sure that your compensation system is decoupled that doesn't allow that. By going to a rolling forecast, you begin to see, if I cut these things, how am I penalizing the future? So you want to create the long-term view in terms of what's out there. And Beyond Budgeting, we've got a number of white papers that document what different people have done. We show how to use relative targets to set compensation. We show how to use, if you can't get comparables from the industry, how you use prior year, how you can adjust for those kind of things. So compensation is always a complicated issue and very, very sensitive to everybody, so you have to treat it very gingerly. But we've got a lot of documented ways to show people how to work through that.
So, as more companies go to this type of model, how will that change the role of the finance professional in organizations?
Well, as more companies adopt the Beyond Budgeting model, what you find is the role of finance becomes more value-added. Because for one thing, we in finance stop doing dumb stuff. We stop trying asking about variance explanations about what we thought we were going to do in the middle of last summer. We stop asking questions that are irrelevant to everybody involved. And we start focusing instead on the forward-looking information. When we get off the back of the boat and we get up on the bridge beside the captain, we're looking at a consistent horizon. How far out do we need to see? four quarters, five quarters, six quarters, 12 quarters, however far we need to see what's coming at us. And we're talking about the issues and opportunities. What threats are coming at us and how do we deal with those? What opportunities might be coming at us and how do we take advantage of those and capture those? So again, we're aligned closely with the operating management, thinking about what's happening, looking at most realistically what we think is going to happen, but because the target is often different than that, it's often but should be in many cases above that. What are we doing to take where we are and make it move to where we want to go? That's a lot of forward planning, and that's a place where finance has the skill sets, but we never have time to work with that because we're stuck doing a bunch of dumb stuff in the past. Free ourselves up from that, then we can turn our attention to helping management focus on how to create the future we really want.
So it sounds like finance professionals will probably have to hone up some new skills. You know, if you're spending all your time, your whole career looking in the past and now you're looking in the future, what are the kinds of things that that finance professionals are going to have to develop in order to provide that value?
Well, in many cases, the finance professionals have the latent skills. They just haven't been exercised. So it's like a muscle. You have the muscle, you just haven't worked it out a lot. So you need to start beginning to think about how to work out those muscles to look forward in terms of what's out there. So you need to be reading about rolling forecasts and how they're implemented. You need to think about the five attributes of diamond level forecasting. How do you make it timely? How do you make it reliable? How do you make it action oriented? How do you make it aligned with what's happening? How do you make it cost effective in terms of what's out there? You need to think about your statistical skills, thinking about, are there ways to use math in the age of big data and so much more information coming at us? How can we use some of these tools that we may have forgotten in college, dust those off, and begin to thinking about linear projections and think about how can I look to what's happening? A simple tool is the old flowcharting tools. How can I look at the flowcharting tools to create a predictive logic diagram? So where finance may be used to dealing with revenue, put the revenue down to the bottom right-hand piece of paper and say, what causes that revenue? Well, it's usually the result of sales calls. So how many sales calls? Where did they come from? How did we get those sales calls? Well, usually somebody had an appointment. Well, what's our sales process? How do we get those appointments? How do we find our customers? Work your way all the way back in the logic diagram through your bombarding your customer universe with advertising media and see on one or two pieces of paper what is really happening in the business and what are the key metrics and how do the analytics work. So how many customers do I have to find? Get them interested, talk to them, have a sales call with them, convert. That's a big funnel and a big pipeline that ultimately creates revenue. If I can create the predictive logic diagram for my company, now all of a sudden I can overlay that with a cycle time map and figure out, to have revenues here, how early did I have to start that there? How much of that's recurring versus how much of that's new? Now all of a sudden, instead of being on the back of the boat, I'm at the front and I'm seeing that happen. I realize that revenue is going to have a shortfall or an overflow flood in the future simply because of the activity in front of us. If it's a shortfall, we need to figure out what to do to get more leads in and make that work better. If it's a flood because we've got too many leads, what's going to happen is that it's just going to be like a flood. It's going to flood over and we're not going to get the benefit of it. So how do we capture more of that coming at us? So again, it's about taking our skills and turning them around and thinking about it differently. Finance can certainly do it. It's just a matter of applying ourselves differently than we have before.
So let's look into the distant future. Every company has gotten rid of its budget. They're using sophisticated rolling forecasts. What does business look like?
Well, in that situation, what it is, it's much more proactive. It's much more business is really about strategic positioning. It's really about product and innovation. If you really think for it, it's business that happens instantly. Think about what all is happening to us in cloud and mobility and big data. Everything that's coming technologically is speeding things up. Cloud computing speeds the deployment of IT. I don't need IT. I don't wait on IT anymore. I can plug in the cloud and instantly anywhere in the world I can get the internet, I can have accounting services. I can have analytics services. I can have big data. Now all of a sudden the barriers that we had in the past are falling away and falling away rapidly. Mobility. I used to be tied to my desk. Nobody's tied to their desk anymore. We can take everything we've got, put it right on the front line. So the FP&A department doesn't have to sit in the back office. It can get out there with the sales force. It's out there with the frontline management. It's seeing what's happening. And because you're in the middle of the operation, think of what better consultant you could be of talking to the business, looking at possibilities, seeing what needs are, seeing what their concerns are, instantly turning that into analysis and giving them feedback of which decision seems to make the most likely sense, creating new options for them, new innovative ways to tackle. So the finance guy gets out of the green eye shades, gets out of the back office, gets up on the front line. He's with an iPad. She's up on the front. She's doing things differently. And they're recreating what we used to do in the back office, but instead of looking backward on the back of the boat, we're all about looking forward, about creating innovation and opportunity. And so everything is happening faster. And if you're not willing to make that move, you're just going to get left in the dust. Because if that begins the transitions, the ones that are willing to move will be winners. The ones that are left in the dust will be left to count and sort out the business that just hadn't changed yet. If you don't change, you'll be doing, I don't know what you'll be doing, but it won't be entertaining.
Right.
It's happening now, and it's not an age thing. A lot of people think, well, only the young people are doing this. There's a lot of old people that are really good at this. Okay, it's the age of your mind, your ability to think about doing things differently, and thinking about why you do something. Why do we budget? Well, we're trying to make people accountable, but does the budget make people accountable? When we argue back and forth and negotiate a result, at some point I lose the accountability and it becomes out there for nobody's accountable. Instead, let me make you accountable by helping you understand what the goal is, and then let's work toward getting the optimal answer. Let's figure out how to be empowered together in terms of what's out there. So I can make a strong argument that Beyond Budgeting gives you people that are more accountable, more transparent, and a better chance of being successful than the traditional system ever would.
So to sum up, what are three things that every finance professional should do in order to just kind of push their organization a little bit towards what you were talking about today?
Three key. If I can only do three things, the first thing I would do is think of the dumb stuff you're doing. The problem most people have in finance is they're limited by time. They don't have enough time to look up. The only way you're going to be able to create new capacity is by thinking of dumb stuff you're doing and figuring out how to stop that. So identify dumb stuff you should stop doing. The second thing is think about the key objectives of supporting the business. What would be a better way to do that? So when you think about planning and control, the reason I stuck with that and the reason I got into that, because it's the brain of the organization. So I don't think any better place than planning and control, the whole budgeting, forecasting. Get rid of the budget, look at the forecast, the whole plan of what we're trying to do and how that links to the strategy of what we're trying to do. That's the brain of the organization. So position yourself with the skills to help think through that. And then finally, number three, think about the new technologies. Think about what social media, what cloud, what big data. Think about how all those things will radically change how we can do business, how we can go to market, the speed of that, how our company serves its customers. Think about that and begin to plug in to learning how you can capture that and position your company to be an innovator, to be a company that disrupts the market as opposed to becoming disrupted. If you do those three things, you'll be well on your way.
Steve, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Jack. Appreciate the opportunity.
Thanks for listening today. For CGMA Magazine articles featuring Steve Player, visit cgmamagazine.org and type Steve Player in the search bar. This podcast is designed to provide illustrative information with respect to the subject matter covered and does not represent an official opinion or position of the AICPA or any of its subsidiaries or affiliates. It is provided with the understanding that the AICPA, its affiliates, and subsidiaries are not engaged in rendering legal, accounting, or other professional services. If such advice or expert assistance is required, the services of a competent professional person should be sought. The AICPA, its subsidiaries, and affiliates make no representations, warranties, or guarantees as to, and assume no responsibility for, the content or application of the material contained herein, and expressly disclaim all liability for such damages arising out of the use of, reference to, or reliance on such material.